Welcome on into the 4 o'clock hour. It is Chris Thomas Turtle with you until 6 o'clock, filling in for the boys on Dukes and Bell. They'll be back tomorrow, and I'll be back in my normal slot from 6 to 10 p.m. We'll get back into the football conversation in a few minutes after a tremendous week one of college football and, of course, the NFL action getting underway on Thursday, and then the Falcons play on Sunday at 1 o'clock at home versus Tampa. Right now, though, we want to head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our buddy Lindsey Crosby, host of Braves Today, Daily Braves Baseball Podcast. Make sure you check it out. Lindsey, before we get into what's going on tonight, over the weekend, Chris Sale makes his triumphant return. And not only did he return, but it looked like he hasn't missed a beat since he went on the IL.
Yeah, Chris Sale was honestly some of the best that we've seen him since he came to Atlanta. Was not giving up hard contact, just really kind of flummoxed Phillies hitters. And you have to feel really good about the idea now. Obviously, they were going to pick up his option, but you feel really good about the fact that it was a fluke injury. He's back to 100%, and next season he should be able to get as close to that dominant version of Cy Sale as you reasonably can expect.
Do you expect them to pitch him every fifth day here on out?
So I would love to see them do a six-man rotation. And I think the problem right now is they brought up an extra reliever. So it's kind of hard to find that sixth guy. Right now it's Sale, Waldrick, Strider, Wentz, and Elder, because they've said Cal Quantrill's in the bullpen going forward. I'd like them to do it. You do have every Thursday off, however, from now through just about the end of the season. So it's going to functionally be a six-man rotation, as in he'll get an extra day of rest every single week.
How impressed have you been with Waldrip? Is it just a lock that because of the injuries to Holmes and Smith-Shawver that he'll be a member of the starting staff next season?
I really thought that they would go out in the offseason, spend some money on a starter, and start him in Gwinnett. But he's been so good, I really don't know how you can do that at this point. Now, obviously, roster flexibility is the biggest thing, right? That sometimes trumps performance. Guys make the roster when they don't have options. If they have options, they start off in Gwinnett. I think Braves fans' preference would be for him to be in the rotation on opening day. I honestly do think if they bring in one more starter, whether it's a top big name like a Dylan Cease or even a back-end veteran, he probably starts in Gwinnett, but he's absolutely the first guy that gets called up. And just like Spencer Schwellenbach, he may be so good when he comes back up that he never goes back down the rest of the season.
Philly series withstanding. What do you make of the uptick in offense? Is there a reason for it? Has Tim Hyers been up to something? What are you gathering?
When I look at this Braves offense, it does feel like a lot of the Tim Hyers adjustments have finally taken effect, right? They're walking a lot more. They're working more counts. They're getting deeper into starting pitchers, getting into the bullpen earlier. I don't know if it's as good of a change as we want it to be, right? Because the power production has just been middling, though. So getting Jurickson Profar back in the lineup was a big deal. Obviously, he's been fantastic at the leadoff spot, getting on quite a bit. But, yeah, they're doing all the stuff Tim Hyers wanted to do. I'm still just torn on whether or not it's ultimately, at the end of the day, a better option than trying to hit those home runs that a lot of these players have been very good at doing. Matt Olson's leading the team, but he's barely in the 20s. And it just feels like, is the ceiling of this team higher but the floor lower if they hit for more power versus doing what they're doing with Tim Hyers, where they're trying to get on base more and be more consistent on a at-bat-to-at-bat basis, but they maybe don't always get the power production that ends up being the thing that can swing some of these games, like we saw from Drake Baldwin on Sunday.
When you settle on where Michael Harris should hit on a day-in, day-out basis starting next year with a healthy roster, where is that spot?
I think if I had if I had the complete flexibility to set it, I like the idea of putting him back in the number nine spot where he was when he was young in the league, simply because he's talked about he likes hitting there. It makes him comfortable. And I think too much as fans, as analysts and all of that, we put too much stock in what the numbers say and maybe not enough in what the players express a preference for. Ronald Acuña Jr. led off for the longest time because he wanted to lead off. Brian Sitker put him there because that's where he was comfortable and that's what he wanted to do. And I think that if everything's working right with the offense, and maybe adding Ha-Seong Kim will help a shortstop, maybe you let him sit in the number nine hole and he can be the best number nine hole hitter in the league versus where you've been putting him 4, 5, 6 somewhat recently.
Does Drake Baldwin deserve to be Rookie of the Year?
I would argue that he does, simply from the perspective of he's been doing it all season and he's been contributing in about every facet of the game, whether it is defense, whether it is offensively, and he's done it with a little bit less playing time than some of the other guys that are running or in the contention for Rookie of the Year. Now, it is clear that Isaac Collins has had bigger moments, bigger individual moments. Cade Horton has impressed in his shorter stint in the league, but Drake Baldwin's done it consistently just about every single month and all season. And to me, that consistency matters. That reliability and that full season sample does matter.
Is Jake Fraley, a guy who has showcased some talent, is he a guy worth taking a look at next year and giving him the rest of the run this year to figure that out, or is he simply going to be a rental and then not back next year?
They put him in today's lineup, and I like to think that he can kind of by default be one of your options for an extra outfielder going into 2026, but I still think Atlanta needs to go out and try to make a signing to add another outfield option so you have the ability to DH Acuña and Profar. So as of now, Fraley's kind of your incumbent. They're trying him out a little bit. I think he played some left field today. He's played right field in the past. But you do definitely still need to look at, can you upgrade that position, get a starting caliber outfielder so that you can rotate your outfielders through. But as of now, it's worth giving him a look for the last month to see if maybe you did find something here in his final year before free agency.
Talking all things Braves and MLB with our buddy Lindsey Crosby, host of Braves Today. Make sure you check out the podcast and on YouTube. All right, obviously all eyes on the guy that's pitching right now, Spencer Strider. First of all, what have you seen over his last couple of starts? What's not working, and what do you think he's working on to correct that?
So one of the big things that made Spencer Strider unique back in that magical 2023 season, everybody points to the fastball velocity, and that's a big deal. But Strider's always been successful because his fastball has been one of the best in the league because of the movement profile. It has more induced vertical break, which is backspin that keeps the ball from dropping as much in the zone as it normally would. He's had more induced vertical break than almost any pitcher in baseball. This year, it's been very average as far as that goes. You combine that with the lower velocity, it's been significantly more hittable. And in his last start, Spencer Strider had an extra day or two of rest. He went to a Maven Baseball Lab here in Atlanta, did some work with those guys there, and the induced vertical break is back to the 2023 numbers. So the movement, and he actually acknowledged after the game, the movement to him is more important than the velocity. So just based on how he was able to make that significant change between starts, I feel like he can continue to improve throughout the rest of this year, but going into 26, I have full faith and confidence he'll be back to the Spencer Strider that we all know and love, that's one of the preeminent strikeout artists in this game.
My only concern with him is the emotional aspect of this game, because we've seen it eat up players, and for as long as you've watched baseball, you've seen great players struggle, and it's a lot of it's between the ears. And he's a guy that wears his emotions heavily on his sleeve. He gives you straight-laced answers in the post-game pressers. Is that something that is concerning to you? Because I've really noticed a change in his attitude, let's say, over the past couple of weeks and when he speaks.
I think he's trying really hard to walk that line between accountability and being negative and down on himself. And I'm still at the point where I think that he's trying to be accountable and being honest without making excuses. I don't quite yet see it as, you know, he's too hard on himself and he's getting into a negative mindset. You can tell he's frustrated. I'll completely agree with you there on his effectiveness or lack thereof this year. But I think he's still doing it right as far as acknowledging that he needs to be better and then being able to explain why. It's not just, oh, I suck, I'm terrible. He's able to put it into words and explain what's wrong. And that makes me feel better that it's not just self-flagellation for self-flagellation's sake, right? That he's actually aware of what he has to work on. It is definitely something I've thought about too, though, and it's something I kind of check every post game press conference and hear what he's saying just to make sure it doesn't veer a little too far. And knowing that he works with a sports psychologist on the regular makes me confident that they're going to be able to catch that before it goes too far.
Percentage chance Ozzie Albies is the starting second baseman next season?
I'm going to give you 80%, right? It feels pretty confident they're going to pick up the option. The difference between a $7 million club option and his buyout is only $3 million. It's a $4 million buyout. So Atlanta only saves $3 million by getting rid of him, and there's very little on the free agency market you can get to replace him for even seven, never mind three. So I think the only way he's not your starting second baseman is if they either trade him in the offseason to somebody else, or they pick up the option and then turn around and sign somebody else, and a new manager is willing to give the starting spot to that new person over him. So again, 80%, he's almost certainly here unless he gets traded. But I whether he keeps that job all year, that's a bigger question. But I think on opening day, he's your second baseman.
You think they're going to break the bank for a shortstop, or is this going to be another try to find 2026's version of Orlando Arcia?
Well, today's waiver claim of getting Ha-Seong Kim from the Tampa Bay Rays, provided they can get him to pick up his $16 million player option for 26, I think that's probably a signal that they didn't like the idea of breaking the bank for a Bo Bichette or having to go out and pay big money for somebody on the free agency market. So given this move that happened, a couple hours ago, I think that they're more than likely going to stick with Kim and Albies. And if they do add somebody, maybe it's a true utility man, right? No shade to Nick Allen, but it's somebody who can play multiple positions like a Willie Castro or a Dylan Moore. But I still think they prioritize an outfield bat over a middle infielder simply because of just the lack of supply on the free agency market and the cost of those guys.
Color me blind, Lindsay. I don't watch a ton of Rays baseball. What is the profile on him?
So really, really good defender. Very much a classic Korean baseball player profile. Doesn't hit for a ton of power. Really good defender. Really good speed. Really good contact. His best season in 2023, he sold 38, maybe it was 38 bags, hit 15 or so home runs, won a utility gold glove playing second, short, and third for the Padres. He's been dealing with injuries, right? He missed the end of last season, started this season with a shoulder after shoulder surgery, had a back issue that sidelined him recently, but very high floor player when he's healthy and somebody who got MVP votes in 2023 for his consistency. So I think if nothing else, he's like Nick Allen if Nick Allen had at least a league average bat. And that's what everybody's been asking for 3 months now, is if Nick Allen could hit, we'd be happy with him. This is a Nick Allen who can hit.
Lindsay, appreciate the time. As always, we'll be chatting soon, and we'll be checking you out on Braves Today on a podcast and on the YouTube page. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, that is Lindsay Crosby there of Atlanta Braves Today. Make sure you go check out the podcast there. All right, when we get back, one of my favorite segments, hasn't done this with Producer E in a while. Let's do Producer Six Pack, shall we? Six questions, four sports of any kind, and two lifestyle questions of E's choosing. And then we'll get back into an NFL conversation with Joe Patrick, our Falcons insider, at the bottom of the hour. Busy 4 o'clock hour coming straight your way. It's Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, and for the boys on Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Appreciate Lindsay Crosby stopping by, talking some Braves baseball. They are underway for an afternoon game in Chicago. Spencer Strider trying to rebound. That's interesting information, E, that he went to a sports clinic here to try to revamp the spin rate per hour or whatever you want to call it and get that thing back in line with where it was when he was a beast in 2023. And it sounds like they figured it out.
Yeah, we'll see as he's on the bump. But, you know, teaser, I had knew that already. Actually, Lindsay had tipped me off to that already because I kind of texted him and was like, hey, what do you think Strider's going to do today? And also talked to our guy, Grant McCauley, and he brought that up on From the Diamond yesterday. And, I mean, I can speak from an umpire's perspective. And when you're back there, you know, and you see a fastball coming, it could be 88, 95, 99. If it's flat and straight, batters are going to tee off on it, okay? Especially, I'm talking about the elite high school and college kids that I do. If it's flat and straight, they're going to take it. But if it's got movement, okay, if it starts on the end of third and ends on the outer third, they can't do nothing with it. That's what makes Chris Sale so remarkable. He gets swings and misses. Spencer Strider needs to do the same thing. Just because it's coming fast doesn't mean anything. Ask Arado Chapman, okay? Arado Chapman throws at 100+, but it's a flat ball. So if once they learn how to catch up to it, see ya.
Yeah, that's why he lost all those playoff series to the Yankees.
Exactly. That's right.
And that's why Greg Maddux threw 88 miles an hour for most of his career and had
and couldn't
a Hall
of be
Fame
hit
career.
Because that ball was starting one place and end 6 inches, 8 inches a different place.
Yeah, he was throwing sliders and slurves and knuckle curves before they were popular. That's the thing. We have a perfect example here in our own backyard of what exactly works and what doesn't. We'll see. I mean, listen, am I worried about the long-term future of Strider? Right now, I would still say no. But hopefully we see signs throughout this start and the rest of the season that he can get back on track like Lindsey Crosby, our guest last segment, was explaining. All right, it is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle coming up next. We're going to chat with Joe Patrick. We'll get the latest boots on the ground report from Flowery Branch ahead of game week. It is game week here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Of course, you know that we get you started on Sunday with Andy Bunker and Joe Patrick at Centennial Yards for the Wade Ford tailgate show. Then we have our guys, Grant McCauley and Mike Johnson, live from the stadium, pre-half and post. And then yours truly, Falcons Flyover, week one at the Signia by Hilton. Come hang out after the game. I will be there until 7:30. So as we will all season long, we have you covered pillar to post right here on 92.9 The Game. With all that said, let's get to a producer six-pack.
It's time for the producer six-pack on Chris Thomas Tonight.
Six questions and six questions to produce greatness
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, a producer six-pack on this Monday, Labor Day. I always want to say Memorial Day. Labor Day. You have a good one? You had some time
off. A lot of people
make that mistake.
Wish it was Memorial Day today because that means you have the whole summer ahead of you, not behind you. But I am excited for the
fall. No, because that's football season.
Yeah, and football. You know what? And let's be honest here. I mean, you're out there sweating your you-know-what's off in the summer, every summer umpiring. You can't be a fan of that sweltering heat here.
I guess I'm just so used to it that doesn't really bother me.
It doesn't
me
bother
anymore.
You? Nope. Wow. I've been here for almost 5 years now. It still bothers me.
It still bothers you.
I ain't going to lie, man.
All right. Let's start with this one. I got a couple here, but I'm going to start with this one. So, Hoodie Bowl, Belichick Bowl starts tonight. I mean, you grew up in New York, Jets fan. Here in Atlanta now, you love the Falcons. I mean, you've got two reasons not to like Hoodie. You've got two of them built in. How do you feel? I said it all weekend. I hope this man falls right on his face. Do you want him to have a successful, stellar 1 year or whatever it is at North Carolina?
Yes, I do. And here's why. As you said, I grew up in New York, Giants, Super Bowls. I grew up a Jets fan. I resigned as the HC of the NYJ on a piece of fax paper. Lived through it all. College football will be more interesting this season if Bill Belichick has a good squad. Let's just be honest about it, man. Like, I want as many fun. I want every week in college football to feel like last weekend felt. Because that was incredible, man. That was maybe a top five weekend for me ever of college football. Just watching big game after big. Like, I didn't have to. Usually, there's like a okay game. You got to switch in there somewhere during the middle of the schedule on Saturday. There wasn't. It was big game after big game after big game from noon until midnight. And I want every weekend to feel as close to that as possible. And if Bill Belichick can make what's already going to be now an interesting ACC with Clemson losing, Florida State, Georgia Tech, Louisville, Miami, I'm all for it.
No. Fall flat on your face. I hope every young man that decided to play for him transfers next week, next year. 2-5, 2-10. No luck for you. I don't want you to see you successful anything.
I mean, nothing. To me, I guess I just look at it like it's already happened. Like, he's ripped my heart out. It's already done. Like, as a Jets fan growing up, losing to Brady in humiliating fashion every single year, twice a year. Like, it is what it is. Like, it's over, man.
Like I said, I don't get it. You've got two reasons to see this man want to
just crumble.
Maybe he's
just beating it out of me. Okay. I don't know.
All right. Have you been paying attention to the Atlanta Dream here in Atlanta?
Hey, man.
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah. They win again today. They are number one team in the East.
Good squad.
Yeah. You think they got a chance to bring home the chip?
Ooh, the Lynx are tough.
31-8.
The Lynx are tough.
And then all of a sudden, the Aces can't lose.
Yeah, and they were down bad.
They sure were.
I thought they might have fired Becky Hammond.
She might have been, yeah.
But. Not now. I think they have a shot.
Yeah. They're going to be, you know, well, they're battling the Aces now for the number two seed.
I'll still take the Lynx. Nafisa Collier is your MVP.
Look at you throwing the names out there. I could have known that one. Okay.
Listen, if you play in Atlanta, I got to at least know a little something about the sport that you play. Obviously, bringing in, even though she hasn't had, you know, the statistical numbers that she's had in the past, presence of Brittany Griner. We know they have a couple of all-star players themselves and Ryan Howard and Alicia Gray. So, listen, I think it could be their year. I think there are probably a couple of teams that are still a little bit better than them. But, hey, man, go Dream. I'm all about it.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, right now they are tied for the second best record in the entire WNBA. They're number one in the Eastern Conference. So they'll have home court advantage possibly in two rounds of the playoffs.
And that's a good home court advantage.
Seriously.
If y'all haven't been to a Dream game,
Gateway Center,
it's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, like that one. I forgot to hit our sound. Let's go. All right, rolling along here. Me and you, we definitely got something to talk about on this one. Yankees, Sox, Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Three and a half, separating all three of them. Do all three of them get in? And actually, who brings home the AL East crown? They play each other. Yankees, Sox.
Yeah, Sox got,
Yeah, and then Yankees play the Blue Jays this weekend.
I'm still going to say the Yankees, because I still think they're the best team out of the three. The Blue Jays, though, had a stretch this year, E, where they couldn't lose.
That's how they got the first place.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
You know, they were not even close to it, and they got so hot. Next thing you know, at one point, they had like a seven-game lead. Down to three now, so they're coming back to earth. But yeah, they won't fire.
Here's my problem with the Red Sox: they're relying on a lot of youth. They just keep calling up. They had like five top prospects that they've called up over the past couple of months that are counted on to play significant roles. I don't know if they have it in them with the youth.
They trade away their vets, and vets keep getting big deals from other teams.
Well, I don't know about Mr. Devers there in San Francisco.
They paid him, though.
Yeah, they did.
They paid him.
I don't know about them.
Everybody's trash and somebody else's gold.
Well, I'm still going to say the Yankees for now.
Yeah. Well, of course, we both will be cheering for him. My dad, rest his soul, loved his pinstripes. So let's see. But this will be a big series. They're three games behind the Blue Jays. They get them three games in the Bronx this weekend coming. All right. Last one of the sports. Aaron Rodgers, elected captain. Captain of the Steelers. Does he get the Steelers in the playoffs?
It's a tough question, man. That whole division, except for the Browns, you can make an argument, could be a playoff team.
Captain! El Capitan!
Well, I get it. Because you know why? If he's playing ball, everybody loves him. The players love him. The players loved him in New York. He just got sick of playing there very quickly because of everything that happened. So, yes, I'm going to say the Steelers are a playoff team this year.
Wow. I don't see it. I think he is so washed up, they're going to find out really fast. Like,
he had a good year last year, though. That's what people don't realize. He had 26 touchdowns and 11 picks.
Is that a good year for four-time MVP?
That's like the third best quarterbacking season in Jets history.
Well, that ain't saying much.
No.
That ain't saying much.
You want a trivia question?
Sure.
Who has the most touchdowns ever in a Jets single season?
In a Jets single season. Brett Favre?
Incorrect. I'll give you one more guess.
Mark Sanchez.
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Harvard. Mr. Beard.
Mr. I played for every team in the NFL. He threw exactly 30 touchdowns in a season.
Really?
About 10 years ago.
Wow. Brett Favre didn't have more than that?
That's no crazy. Chad Pennington, no Joe Namath, no Brett Favre, no Sanchez, no Geno.
Yeah.
Okay, Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Not saying
how
much.
About that?
Yeah. Wow. All right. Yeah, man. It was tough growing up, huh? As you do have your Yankees hat on today.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to some non-sports ones. Dietary restrictions, or have you ever tried to go to a vegan diet, even for a small amount of time?
Once, yes. And the reason I stopped wasn't because of the food taste. It was because of the food prep.
Oh.
It is impossible to buy pre-cooked, ready-to-eat meals that are vegan. And I just don't have the patience to cook every single meal every day for myself. There's all sorts of juices, all sorts of butters that need to be... Because, like, your core cooking ingredients need to be vegan.
You're right.
So anything that you use... Milk, eggs, flour, butter, like that all needs to be vegan. And to have to manipulate and work through all of that for every single meal, I couldn't do it.
Okay, what about just vegetarian? Because if you go vegetarian, you can have some of those things.
Never tried just vegetarian. I did try vegan, though. Didn't work. Couldn't do it.
So you remember in Pulp Fiction, right before Samuel Jackson was about to execute those guys, he says, yep, my girlfriend's vegetarian, which pretty much makes me a vegetarian.
Right.
Well, guess what? My girlfriend is now... a vegetarian, which pretty much makes me a vegetarian.
Oh,
I've lost 10 pounds.
Hey, there you go. That works. Now, let me ask you something. Are you sticking to it when you're not with her?
Okay. So I am allowed to have chicken or fish once a week.
How did you negotiate those
things? We get it because we get a cheat day.
Okay.
We get a cheat day.
All right.
I myself said that I am willing to give up red meat and pork. I am a middle-aged black man. That's probably a good thing for me.
Sure.
Okay. So the chicken or fish was the, you know, the and it's not just fish. I eat no shrimp right now, especially from Walmart. But you know, any type of seafood we're allowed to have. So that's one day a week.
Good luck, sir.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah. My girlfriend's vegetarian. Pretty much makes me a vegetarian.
Well, use those 10 pounds as motivation.
Yeah. There it is. All right. Last one. Not sports related, but definitely radio related. So, what are we, a month? How far are we into Chris Thomas Tonight now?
Oh, no, much more than that. April 14th was the first show.
Wow. April? I remember the week we were talking about. Can we announce it yet?
Yeah. April 14th.
So, the whole summer, what have you learned? How's it going for you? I haven't been with you. I haven't done a single weeknight with you, and I haven't seen you much on the weekends, man. Congratulations. You're doing great. Of course, I'm listening to you. I'm either headed to a game. Or coming to from a game. Yeah. So,
no, it's been amazing. Obviously, I'm so grateful for the opportunity and everybody that's been involved has been so generous and gracious. It's been interesting just keeping, you know, when you're on once a week, you can hit the biggest story,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I'm learning that, yeah.
Yeah, and when you're on every day, it's about, you know, keeping it fresh. It's about keeping the audience engaged. It's about challenging yourself. It's about making sure you're getting the best out of your producer and your team and everybody that's involved on the show because, you know, it's 4 hours a night of quality sports talk. You got to make sure that you bring it hard. As Jim Rome says, bring it strong to the mic every single day. That's definitely been the biggest thing that I'm trying to continue to work on every single day is just make sure that I'm – you know,
no, brother, yeah, I'm not buttering you up, man. You're doing great. I'm every day, at least during the week, I'm either headed to a high school or coming from a high school, whether I'm umping or, of course, now Friday nights are back, high school scoreboard show. Make sure you're tuned in.
Yeah.
That's the one night you'll get off.
Yeah, that's right. Off Friday nights now for that. All right, E, appreciate it, man. We will get some more Falcons talk in here with our insider, Joe Patrick, stops by next. That's right. We have made it. It is game week for the Atlanta Falcons. Tampa Bay at home on Sunday. It's been a long offseason with a lot of ups and downs for the Atlanta Falcons, but we have made it. To break it down on the Wade4.com hotline, it's Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you till 6 o'clock in for the guys on Dukes and Bell. Joe Patrick, our Falcons insider. Joe, let's start with obviously the most pressing question. What is the latest on right tackle in terms of starter and depth with McGarry out for the year?
Yeah, you know, it sounded like today Raheem Morris, you know, kind of sounded more firm about Elijah Wilkinson, kind of solidified him as being the team starter, which I think we kind of knew. You know, there had been, I don't know if it had been like firmly declared that he was going to be the starter this week up to this point, but certainly the context clues were there, and that is what will be the case for the team this week. So Elijah Wilkinson will be the starter at right tackle, and then, you know, if it's a shocker from him in a bad way, then maybe we hear some, you know, second thoughts about what they'll do going forward. But I think that's what the team will basically want, is that Wilkinson basically being the guy who holds on to that position, at least until Storm Norton gets back. And then maybe there's some discussion. Of course, you know, they've brought in some guys that can potentially get looks there at right tackle over the course of the season, but none of those guys that they brought in, any of the guys who were traded for and Jarrell or the waiver claim, or not waiver claims, but the free agent pickups for the practice squad, none of those guys can realistically play for this team, just given their recency to the team for at least a few weeks, I would say. And so Wilkinson's going to be that guy. I would imagine, Chris, that he's like going to be the starter at that position until they get to the bye week in week 5, which is now looking like a more fortuitous bye week considering the injury issues in that position in particular. And then I think they'll reassess once they see Storm Norton. And, hey, who knows? Maybe if Wilkinson is playing well, it gives Storm Norton a little bit of, you know, not so much of a rush to get him back coming off of his surgical procedure that he had on the ankle there. But, you know, not a great situation for the Falcons. But, you know, I think, honestly, Chris, it's something that's going to hurt them more in the run game than the passing game, even though the passing game has been more of the focus with this injury because – one is a tackle. You know, consider your tackles as being kind of assets in the pass game. And obviously with it being Penix's blind side. But ultimately, I think that, you know, where this is going to hurt the most is in that run game where McGarry was truly exceptional by NFL standards, where he wasn't really. And I don't know if there's going to be that big of a difference between what Caleb McGarry was as a pass protector versus what you're going to get from any of these other guys. Having said that, Chris, I do imagine this is going to play out like a backup quarterback, where it's like anytime the right tackle is at fault for anything, you're going to be thinking, oh, you know, what would it have been McGarry, if that was McGarry, you know, you would have had that cleaned up, whatever. But, you know, ultimately, you know, it's that, that absence makes the heart grow fonder, as they say, of especially someone like McGarry who can himself get beaten pretty badly in certain situations. So we'll see how it goes for this Falcons team.
Do you expect Charlie Warner to be tied to Wilkinson's hip?
Tied to the hip, no, but I am curious as to how much he will be used to help in those situations. And I do think that question, Chris, brings up something that it's not just like you throw another guy in for McGarry and then you just kind of, you know, roll just as you normally would. I think that Zach Robinson, the offensive coordinator, has to take some of this burden on his shoulders as to how this offense operates without piece like McGarry in. You know, like, for example, this team had the most success in the run game running that outside zone to that right-hand side behind Chris Lindstrom and Caleb McGarry. And I think Zach Robinson would be foolish to think that he can just continue to spam that button, you know, again and again like he had, even though it was so reliable previously. I think that you just got to look at ways you can help yourself offensively, and whether that's in passing situations, keeping Warner in to chip or to block fully, or in the run game. Like, do you run some more gap scheme stuff that's more up the middle with, especially, you know, you've got a new center, and I always kind of figured that Ryan Neuzel's insertion into this offensive lineup was going to make some of that gap scheme stuff a better option for this team anyway. But I think that there's just different ways that Zach Robinson has to – take it on himself to help out this offensive line and the offense in general, because that's his job, is to scheme up these players and put them in the best possible position to succeed.
What do we think about Darnell Mooney and his status for week one? If he plays, what percentage do you feel like we'll be able to see from him, or is there just no indication of that?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, what I like to tell people is to just kind of watch the practice reports as they come out. I think that it was encouraging that he was back on the practice field last week. So you figure that if he was on the practice field last week, that's allowing him to just get more work done, you know, with Michael Penix catching passes and whatever it is that he needs to do to get himself ready to play. I do think the fact that it's a shoulder, Chris, makes it, to me, that's like, it's more encouraging that he'd be able to play. And if he is able to play, he's able to play at, you know, some reasonable capacity of his, or some reasonable expectation that he would be able to, you know, fulfill his maximum capacity, because it's not like a leg injury where he's going to be tentative to plant or to be out of condition. You know, I presume he's been able to, like, you know, be on the treadmill and be able to keep his cardio up to just be fit enough and like be ready to play in that sense. And, you know, maybe he's not able to, like, reach out for the ball quite like he normally would, although I'm not saying that he couldn't. But I just feel like because it's an upper body injury, I think that he's more likely to be able to come in and give you, I think, what you're expecting out of Darnell Mooney, which is that speed and just that dynamism on the outside.
Talking all things Falcons with our own insider, Joe Patrick. Make sure you check out the podcast, Joe Patrick on Football, anywhere you get your podcasts. Say more about the two rookies that are starting in terms of their ability or lack of depth for the Falcons.
I think it's both. I mean, I think it's both, but I think the lack of depth, I think that, like, we all kind of knew that they were going to lack some depth. And listen, like, you know, depth is created by rookies in the third and fourth rounds becoming starters for you, or becoming like starting capable players for you. Now you say becoming because usually you're not relying on those types of players to come in and play. But I do think in this case with these two players in particular, there was a clear path from the moment they were drafted or even before they were drafted as to how these two players would come in and impact this Falcons defense. Of course, we're talking about Xavier Watts and Billy Bowman Jr., the two players in the secondary. And I think the more interesting and maybe more illustrative case is with Billy Bowman Jr., actually, the second of those two players who was drafted, where, you know, he's a college safety. That's what he's played. That's what he's listed as. And the second he was drafted, it was weird because the Falcons had just drafted a safety in Watts. And, you know, immediately Jeff Olberg, the defensive coordinator, comes out and says to the media, he's a nickel. We have a plan for him at nickel. We think his traits match up with what we want in this spot. And that, lo and behold, is where he's won his job. And I think that spells, I think, good things for him just because of the clarity of what he's being asked to do. And, you know, Raheem Morris says it all the time, role clarity. I think that that's a perfect example of a clear role, a clear set of traits and abilities that they need that player in that role to have, and Billy Bowman stepping up and filling those roles and filling, you know, the traits for that role. So will it be perfect off the bat? No, definitely not. I think that both these players are probably in line to make their fair share of mistakes, like all rookies do. But I think ultimately, when you look at them, they both were also very prolific in terms of creating turnovers in the college ranks, both amongst, you know, having the most interceptions and turnovers, whether it was last season or in their careers. And so I think that's what you're really looking for. If they make mistakes, so be it. But if they can ultimately make the big plays when you need them to be made, when they're there to be made, then that's what the Falcons drafted them. And that's why they put them in this lineup. And whether that happens week one or not, you know, we'll see. But I think that that's the reason. That's what gives the Falcons a lot of hope and excitement for what these players can bring to this defense.
How do you think Jalen Walker's readiness is right now, just overall?
I think he's ready. I mean, like, I don't think he's going to be asked to, like, what's interesting, Chris, we were just talking about those guys in the secondary. I feel like there's actually a little bit less pressure on some of these edge defenders, even though they were the first round picks, and you obviously expect a lot more from those guys to, like, come in and produce right away. But the Falcons have some good options there already in the likes of Leonard Floyd, who was like their marquee free agency signing, and then Arnold Ebikadi, who I think is going to take another step up this year. He's kind of steadily improved every single year, in my opinion, and now he's in a contract year. So, players just, historically, statistically improve when they've got that new contract to earn. I think that's going to be the case for Ebikadi. So I think that Jalen Walker, a player like him, what you really want him to come in and do is not so much be an out-and-out pass rusher. That's more the James Pierce. I think with Jalen Walker, what you want is somebody who can play the run and just be like a football player, be a football player on the edge, like have that instinct to go for the ball. That's what we know he can do. He's built for it. He has, in my opinion, like an NFL ready body, Jalen Walker. I know there were some concerns with him as to like the exact measurables with regards to the arms and the length and stuff like that. But just in terms of the strength and kind of thickness that he has, just like, he's ready to come in and kind of be, I think, an edge setter in the run game. And I think the Falcons really need that, especially considering they lost Braylon Trice potentially for the year again, as he was said to have like a recurrence, apparently, of the ACL injury that kept him out all last year. So he's certainly going to have plenty of opportunities to go out there and play. And he certainly is ready. Raheem Morris confirmed that today, that he's physically all ready to go and ready for week one.
All right, before I let you go, captains were named today. Bradley Pinion, Caden Ellis, Jesse Bates, Jake Matthews, Chris Lindstrom, and yes, Michael Penix Jr. How big of a deal is that he was named a captain?
Yeah, I think that's going to get notes from around the league, but I don't think for anybody that follows this team or sort of like covers this team that is a surprise at all, because he is a natural leader. He doesn't say it. He's not a rah-rah guy like some others are. But he doesn't need to be. Guys follow him. He just has this natural leadership ability. And, you want your quarterback to kind of be a captain, be a leader of this offense. And he is absolutely that, And going into his second year, he's all, organizing guys in the offseason to throw. And not only is he organizing it, guys are like lining up, his teammates to meet up with him, whether it's in California or Florida or wherever it is, to be catching passes and to do everything they can to get out there and play. And I think that those are the reasons why he has rightly been named a captain of this team.
Joe, appreciate it as always. Next time we chat, we will be reviewing, hopefully, a week one win. I'm excited.
How about that? How about that? We get some football this weekend, Chris, finally.
Yeah, and people can hear you Sunday morning at 9 o'clock, correct, on the Wade Ford?
That's right. So, yep, Wade Ford Show, Sunday at 9 a.m., right and early with Andy Bunker. Yep, looking forward to it.
And I'll be closing it off with the Falcons flyover. Joe, appreciate you as always.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, that is Joe Patrick there, our Falcons insider. When we get back to kick off the fourth and final hour of a fast-moving Monday show, Chris Thomas Turtle in for the guys on Dukes and Bell. All right, good results for Georgia and Georgia Tech. How far can they go? Let's talk landscape, because we got to see all the big guys in action this weekend. What did we see in the ACC, in the SEC, and beyond? Where do our two big local squads fit in? I think one of them may surprise you. That's going to come up next to kick off the 5 o'clock hour. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app.